Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us for the weekly update here at JM and the AM. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you as always.
It's amazing when you think back to our conversation last week. Everything was just developing and all the news was beginning to leak out and somewhat, become reliable as we were on the air discussing. And then subsequently, of course, the murder of four of our brethren in the kosher supermarket in Paris. Start with the credit, because it took a lot of time to find out who actually took credit for the attack. Do we believe at this point that Al-Qaeda, based in Yemen, are the ones who called for the attack on the newspaper in Paris?
Yes, there's definite evidence, and especially given the fact that, as we discussed last week, that one of them at least was in Yemen, that there were communications between them, that they certainly had the training, and of course, as I said last week, we would find a connection to a prison and imams, etc., and it turns out that they were in prison and recruited likely there, at least initially. So that evidence seems to be apparent. It is not so apparent about the connection between the killer at the kosher grocery store right. and ISIS. It seems that that was his association, and he did have online contact, meaning that he went to websites, but it doesn't appear that he was actually sent, as it does appear to be the case with Al-Qaeda in Yemen, being directly involved in giving the orders.
And as you, I think, agreed with last week, that's simply a technicality. You could still, in terms of a ripple effect of ISIS, put this guy right there in the circle.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Because many of our leaders hesitate to do so.
Right. And whether this guy was, in fact, freelancing on his own or right. he certainly had contact with these other guys, and his girlfriend had contact with them. The fact that she was able to escape so quickly into Syria and probably left a couple days in advance, there are other evidence, but remember what we've talked about. There are 1,000 French guys fighting in Syria who are coming back. We saw the raids in Belgium this week trying to break up IS-related cells, and they several people were killed in the raids in Brussels, but they were all over the country, and it resulted they closed the Jewish schools. They did other things, but those were actually prophylactic measures. It wasn't because of a specific threat against them, as was the case with the synagogue, the great synagogue in Paris, which for the first time since the Vichy government, when Paris was under the Nazi control, didn't have davening on Shabbos, this past Shabbos.
Yeah.
The Grand Mosque was open. The great synagogue was not. And it tells you what the difference is.
No question. The circle of accomplices, in other words, now, obviously, French authorities, and it goes beyond the French authorities, are there's a manhunt on, essentially. I mean, you mentioned the one accomplice who quote-unquote, escaped. But there are others on that list now, right? There are radicals that are either in an ancillary manner or more direct manner associated with these murderers who are being sought out.
Sure. There are at least six people that the French government has identified. And we had a conference call yesterday with the Prime Minister of France, Valls, and the head of the Jewish community, Raja Kukerman, and they indicated that they are going, that they are still looking for these other accomplices directly and indirectly involved.
French intelligence. It seemed from some of the articles I read that it was a blunder. They didn't catch the events leading up to this attack. You buy that or not?
Look, we have had people are approaching this as if it's an event in isolation, when in fact, you remember we discussed the rape of the woman who was raped by a gang of Muslims, mm-hmm. saying that they wanted to get a Jewish woman. The going back to Toulouse, going back even further to Halimi, the killing of and torture of the young 21-year-old man.
Right.
The scores and scores of incidents, and not scores, hundreds. 40% of the acts of violence are against Jews.
But did French intelligence indicate afterwards that there was a direct threat against this magazine, or there's no reason to believe that?
No, against the magazine, absolutely. There were previous threats because of their depictions of Muhammad in various cartoon forms. But the fact that the kosher grocery store on a Friday afternoon didn't have better security, and there was a guard there, I think, that the supermarket employed. But where were the police? There are 5,000 people now guarding institutions in Paris. But it's always after the fact.
Well, if we're now going...
Which is how long they will sustain it.
I understand that. But if you're going to extend this recommendation, then there are a lot of kosher groceries in a lot of neighborhoods in this country that should be very concerned about security as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Not only do I agree, but, I mean, we created an organization, SCAN, the Secure Community Network, to deal with that, to try and mobilize people. There's a lot that communities can do. There's a lot that people can do. Cameras, guards.
I mean, there are neighborhoods,
and we have to think about these things.
There are neighborhoods in this area that are filled with, you know, kosher groceries and, you know, Jewishly identified stores. I mean, do each and every one of them need security guards, cameras, precautions?
I think they have to talk to the police force. I think that they have to train their employees. I think people generally have to be much more aware. You know, see something, say something. It really is a serious program that we all have to internalize. People don't. And regardless of something that you may think is insignificant, really could be more significant. And as you said, there are other populations potentially that could harbor a hostile person, or where the propaganda, which is spreading, it's universally available now on the Internet.
Mm.
Not as in the past.
Sometimes it's hard to convince a modest local grocery store that they're a target of terrorism. You know what I mean? Like it's.
Yeah. I agree, and I'm not saying that you can that
right.
they can afford to do it. I'm saying that there are that awareness, etc. But there are institutions, and I will tell you that I got quite a few calls over the weekend from principals of schools in particular. And that is a very vulnerable area where steps can and should be taken.
Right.
And we have people who will do training for, you know, lone shooter. You know, the school in Connecticut saved many lives because the teachers were trained. And you don't have time if, God forbid, something happens.
Right.
And that was not a Jewish institution. It wasn't directed at anything Jewish. But the phenomenon is the same, that how do you deal with that kind of situation? And the answer is that if you train people, then they react instinctively to know to put the kids in a closet, to go under the tables, to have the kids trained. It doesn't scare them if they go through this kind of an exercise, if it's done, you know, with intelligence.
We have kids in a variety of schools, as you know, and one of them sent an email this week after the attack, sent an email, you know, that we're now switching to this type of doorknob and this type of door, and this will be the new entry system. And, you know, there's always more and more and more you could add to the whole security picture.
Yes, but the fundamentals can be there, and the fact is that this has to be on a broader basis. We met with Commissioner Bratton and NYPD, which is really out front, way ahead of everybody else, I think, in the country on these issues, focusing on Jewish institutions as well as all others, but recognizing the unique danger that could be presented.
Yeah, one of the articles.
No evidence of it. There's no threat. There's no. We don't want people to misread it. But the way you prevent it is by taking the necessary measures to deter.
Yeah.
You may not be able to identify every potential terrorist or everybody who has a gripe or wants to carry out a crazy attack about sports facilities. You know, the word from Al-Qaeda in Iraq is that they're training them to go after transportation systems, iconic buildings, which has nothing to do with the Jewish community.
Right.
So it's a universal awareness, but you got to go after the source, which means that we have thousands, tens of thousands of people fighting in Syria who are being trained to be killers. You have them on the Internet. You have, and these guys were followed, but obviously they lost them, or they felt after a while that they, for some reason, whether resources or otherwise, that they stopped following them. And then that would have prevented it as well.
This past week in Paris seems to have struck a nerve, obviously. And it seems like the war on terror European style is now on. Do you think that this episode is in fact going to change the attitude of European countries and other countries toward what's happening with terror episodes and with the rise of radical Islam in their countries?
History, particularly of France, but of others, is that they react immediately as public opinion and the public demands it and is looking for reaction. And sometimes the reaction can be, you know, support for Le Pen or other extremists and anti-immigration movements, et cetera. Some is for a call for more police action, for stronger legislation and laws and law enforcement. But the problem is that the history of Europe is appeasement, that they try to buy them off. Then, and I can show you many examples in France from the 70s when they bought off the Palestinians to protect to stop the bombings of airplanes, throughout the decades since then of repeated acts of appeasement. And it may be what we're doing with Iran too, that the West's attitude and refusal to stand up and knowing that Iran is behind much of the terrorism and groups, not exclusively and not necessarily for each group. But there is somebody behind it. There's money coming from Qatar, Turkey support. Where have we taken a strong stand regarding Turkey's open support and having the parliament hear calls for the destruction of Israel that Erdogan himself yesterday talked about Netanyahu being equal to the attackers there and then saying the mayor of Ankara saying it was the Mossad behind it. Where's the reaction? How come we let these guys who are playing such a negative role vis-a-vis Syria and vis-a-vis the situation in the Middle East and expanding their caliphate goals, where have we been? The picture of Abbas being greeted by Erdogan in his $800 million new presidential palace, you know, this is a great defender of the people's, $800 million. And they were greeted by guards from 16 different eras of Turkish history, from the Mongols to the Ottoman Empire. I mean, the people said it looked like an Ottoman circus when the pictures were taken of it. So, you know, we let them get away with it all the time. And then they blamed, Erdogan blamed the French because he said they were in prison, in a French prison. And therefore, France is responsible because they didn't do anything with him there and deal with it.
I was just shocked that when he compared Bibi to the terrorists and said that he was responsible for crimes against humanity, just like the terrorists are, I was shocked that he was accusing the terrorists who killed Jews of crimes against humanity. I thought he'd be more sympathetic toward them.
Remember also that France refused to put Hezbollah, was one of the countries in Europe,
right,
on the terrorism list. And if you recall, over Algeria, how they followed a policy of appeasement, let alone in World War II.
Well, they were worried about a backlash from their Muslim population, I assume. Not necessarily.
They were worried about the appeasement. That's exactly the policy. They refused to stand up, take the position, and that prevented the G7.
Yeah, I understand appeasement, but it's also politically motivated. I mean,
Some of what we see now, back in the 70s, the Muslim population wasn't 10% as it is today, and facing a presidential election, it is, of course, a factor. But look, even in Argentina now, the disclosures that the president and the Kirchner and Timmermans, the foreign minister, tried to erase Iran from the case on the bombing of Amia and the Israeli embassy. They tried to remove it because they were going to get money for it. And the idea that Argentina, after all these years of investigation and all the evidence, and the Alberto Nissim, the prosecutor, federal prosecutor, issued this very lengthy report documenting the effort to do it. We keep, you know, condescending to it. We keep compromising with it. We keep succumbing to it. And we are encouraging people, terrorists, to do more.
It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial, broadcasting live from the Sonia and Robert Gold Studios in Jersey City, New Jersey, around the world on the web, jmnam.org. Special welcome to those tuned in on the NSN app around the world. Got to talk about what happened on Sunday because so many people are curious what you have to say about each individual piece to this anti-terror unity rally that took place in Paris. First of all, the participation of Benjamin Netanyahu. There are those who are skeptical that he would not have gone if it was not an election year. Then there are those who did not quite like his behavior at the event itself. What's your take on Bibi's visit to Paris for the rally?
Listen, in the silly season in Israel, every action is criticized. I'm sure if he didn't go, he would have been criticized. You saw how President Obama has been criticized for the failure to have representation. Others will say, well, Lieberman decided to go, and therefore he decided to go. I have asked about the invitation issue, which became a big issue, and French officials told me that no invitations were extended. There were some who said that Hollande, the president, didn't want Bibi because then he would have had to have Abbas, as was the case, and others. But the hypocrisy of the event, the fact that you had Abbas, Qatar, Turkey, the very countries that are engaging in incitement, that are supporting, that are abetting these activities and these extremist groups, were marching in the demonstration against the very things that they are responsible for and will not change and do not apologize for, and turn this, I think, into an act of cynicism and hypocrisy.
It's comical.
If they wanted to come, they should have been on their knees begging forgiveness for what they've done.
It's comical. And I think that's one of the reasons that Bibi seemed uncomfortable there. He's right there, right near him are leaders of terror groups, or those who sponsor or endorse terror groups.
Sorry, I think people have to remember that French Jews needed to see him. Look at what happened when he came into the synagogue, and frankly, Jews were not the reason for this demonstration.
Right.
The killing of Jews was not. If it had only been a massacre at the kosher supermarket, you would not have had a march of 3 million people.
That's,
it was
so
the
sure.
killing of the journalists, and justified, and it was a terrible, terrible thing, and a Jew died there as well. But he didn't die as a Jew. He died because he was a cartoonist at this publication. And the demonstration would have been called for in any event, but you would not have had it if it were only a thing. So the presence of the prime minister in the one side, you know, emphasizes and gives a message to the Jews of France who came out that they aren't alone, that they have a state. I think it's a mistake to link it to the calls. I think that would, you know, there's a time and place for everything. But that message of kinship, of support, of bonding with the French Jewish community at a time when they need it is important.
And Abbas being there is just absurd. I mean, there's no other way to put it, right? I mean,
I think obscene is closer.
And he's not invited, as you just, and that's what I would think. There wouldn't be invitations to an event like this. It's essentially open to everybody. So he hops on the opportunity to go and act like the moderate that the whole world thinks he is.
And you know, remember, he is a partner of Hamas. And you saw in Gaza this week that Hamas, one of the former ministers who's organized the calls for the cell for attacks, and is engaging in behalf of Hamas, but Hamas is part of unity government. Attacks against Fatah, the 13 attacks against their homes and the senior officials' homes, against the French Cultural Center. He is a partner with him, and he continues to go to the ICC, and I'm sure we'll discuss it and all that process, when he should be in the docket at the ICC, and hopefully will be. Do we remember the Quinnell, the reversed Nazi salute,
right?
And how the tolerance, even though it was denounced by the government, and Dudien was roundly criticized, he's the so-called comedian who invented, but is blatantly anti-Semitic and hated. And then, by the way, just look at what came out this week about Britain. 45% of the Jews say they have no long-term prospects for them there. 58% said none in all of Europe.
Yeah, but if you took the same poll in America, you know, the nationalistic Jews would also be at 50%.
And not anywhere near it. 45% of all the Jews, not a particular branch of Jews, it's a message of the sentiment of their psychological comfort, of their security.
Well, why should they feel any comfort or security? I mean, there would be no reason for it at this point.
Or
there's no reason for any Jew in any country in Europe at this point should not feel any comfort or security.
And that's right. So I'm saying it's not limited. It's a general climate that is running through all of the countries because of the failures of governments to act, because of the demographic realities, because of the, inability and maybe even if willingness, the inability to be able to address all of these.
All right, so let's play this game for a minute. If you asked American jury across the board the same question, what number do you think would come up?
About how many
think there's a future?
No future in America.
Yeah, correct.
Less than 10%.
Wow. I got to add that thing to my next presentation about making Aliyah to Israel. The Obama thing is such an unbelievable topic. I myself, who has not always been the most supportive of the President of the United States in terms of his policies, I was divided about whether he really should have gone or not. I think the move would have been, of course, to send the Vice President. First of all, could you tell us? And maybe over a cup of coffee, you'd be more comfortable discussing it and not in this forum. But why do you think he didn't go? Like, what do you think was behind it?
Well, the president moving is a huge security operation. And when you have 40 heads of state, the president, and you see it during UN week, is subject to a completely different security arrangement. And the decision to go or not to go is, I think, we will have to wait till the books are written. Clearly, it wasn't because there was some pressing business at home. And what to me is more astounding is that Holder, the Attorney General, was there and didn't go. He went to Ferguson when he was from Washington, but he didn't go while he was there. And he said he had some TV interview and he had to go back and whatever. The president should have said to him, you're there, you're going. So at least it doesn't have to be the president there. A high-ranking official should have been there. Representing the United States, the ambassador, it's fine that she was there, but that's not the same thing as sending a message to the French and to aside from the Jews that of where America stands on this issue.
Don't you think all sides would have been placated if the vice president would have gone?
Absolutely. And I'm saying to you, I think it could have been even easier if Holder went.
Right.
The attorney general, who was there.
He was in Paris, but did not go to the rally.
Did not go, but you gotta say the administration has said it was a mistake, and obviously they regret it now. They reconsidered the position, but
someone said to me, you know that's why they created vice presidents to go to events like this.
Well, that's right, for some of the funerals, other things.
Right. It really could have solved a lot of problems. The Israeli reaction, I mean, we alluded to this at the beginning of this part when, you know, you spoke about the cynicism that Bibi and others are facing now because it's pre-election. But the Israeli press, I don't know, they really piled it on him this week. The way he got onto a bus, the way he pushed forward during the march itself. I mean, I don't know. Look, you know, sometimes I have an affinity toward Bibi, so maybe it's difficult for me to criticize him in this situation. But don't you think they were a bit unfair this time around?
You know that somebody created a game and it has Bibi in a marching formation.
Yeah.
A likeness of it, a cartoon sort of esque depiction. And you push Bibi through the lines. I didn't hear anybody talking about why Abbas was in the front row or the president of Mali was in the front row.
Right.
I don't know that people were assigned places to march, just they lined up. I just think, you know, because of, again, being the political season there, it's...
I wonder if any of this is going to have an effect on the election. I wonder if anybody...
This will not have a long-term effect on the election. It's, you know, 2 months is a lifetime in politics generally. In Israel, it's an eternity. And we will see the numbers go up and down. That's why people ask me every time, okay, you know, it says you look at the numbers and Buji Herzog is up to and he's down to or something. You have to look at who can form a coalition, who can get 61 votes. That's the key number, so even if they get less seats. And secondly, those numbers will vacillate also. And it's too early. Let people see.
He went through that last time. Bibi didn't have the most votes last time, but
he came in second, but he could present a credible coalition to...
And the people who think it's far-fetched, it just happened last election. Like, that could happen certainly again. Robert Eznes was with us from the Council of Jewish Organizations in France this past Monday, just discussing the whole situation, obviously, and what he knew about the attack. And this whole issue of Jews moving from France to Israel or wherever else they want to go, because he also emphasized that, you know, people are leaving France and going to the United States and other countries as well. But it's a very sensitive issue in France. I think a lot more than when people make Aliyah from here or decide to leave the United States. I don't know how many people in the U.S. care. It seems that the French and French authorities take offense to all this talk about leaving the country. Does the Aliyah from France have to be handled a little bit more delicately?
And I think it's also a question of timing. It's a question of how you present this. The French government, as the prime minister said, France without Jews is not France, and that there were many other statements made because of the sensitivity. And you don't, at a time when the country feels under siege, say, you don't belong there, this is not your home. You're only reinforcing the message then to some extremists who then say, you see, we told you this is not, they are not loyal to France, this is not their place.
Did Bibi fall into that trap? Did he say publicly to people?
Well, earlier, not while he was there, and he was misquoted about his speech in the synagogue. He didn't say, tell people you should go. He said, you should be able to live in France in security, and if you decide, you always have a place in Israel, which is a lot different
than go move to Israel.
Called on the people to leave and to go. But think about it. If 25,000 people made Aliyah from out of a population of 600,000, that's the equivalent of 250,000 Jews leaving America in a year.
Right. It's big.
So it is a significant number, and it's not only those 25,000 left, 100,000 more inquired, begun a process, looking. Many French people have moved to more than 100,000 to England, not Jews generally, but also Jews. When in fact, a lot of the problem emanates from England, where you have these radical imams and a strong presence of Islamists as well.
Yeah, it's funny. England is perceived as being safer for Jews, but I don't know how long that's going to last. And a couple of articles online, folks, you can find them online, about French Jewish communities in Israel now and as they continue to grow, of course. And I'm sure, Malcolm, when you're in Jerusalem, you hear a lot more French being spoken, right?
Absolutely. And in Miami and in Netanya, especially anywhere near the water, the French love the new buildings near the water and buy them. They're partially responsible for some of the rise of the price in real estate, but not exclusively. And I know many of the people who didn't go on Aliyah necessarily have bought homes in Israel and are preparing over time to. They can't just walk away from their businesses and things.
Tell us about the public statements that have been made by the leader of Egypt over the last week or two. I am amazed at some of the things that he is saying publicly, and frankly, I'm sure he's I would assume he's fearful for his life for the way that he's speaking out against terrorism.
Well, he seems to be pretty courageous, and frankly, when I met him a couple months ago, he made statements in this direction, not as strong as the presentation he made about Islam needing to come to reform and Islam having to look itself about the embarrassing position, about how it is viewed around the world, that the terrorism, and I mean, really a wholehearted, round common condemnation of the extremists who have hijacked the religion, essentially, is what he said. He has attracted new investment. He's trying to fight. He has tremendous battles. People don't realize the situation in Libya, where you have an open border of 1,600 kilometers, the same with Sudan. Sudan, you have Iran instigating. You have them, they are angry at him because his association with the West. He has linked up with Egypt. Egypt has linked up with Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Jordan, and others in the moderate camp. He certainly has been doing a job in the Sinai, working, cooperating with Israel fully on the on protecting the against the Hamas and the area in the Gaza, but even more. So he has done quite a few courageous things, and I know we see American government, others are critical of him because of the human rights issues, and those are legitimate, but we have to look at it in a much broader context, and that is true for other countries in the region with whom I met this week, and you hear only this feeling of alienation because they're being beaten up over human rights when they're fighting for their survival.
Go back 3 years, Malcolm. Literally this time of year, I think it was February, the U.S., it now looks in hindsight, they made a terrible mistake not supporting Mubarak during the Arab Spring. Agreed or not?
that, well, it's not a question just of supporting Mubarak. We could have worked, and we've pressed them all along with moving the promise that we created an impression that we support the Muslim Brotherhood, that we favored the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right, and if not...
And it will take a long time to undo that. The anger in America, both amongst officials and amongst the people, is very pronounced.
Yeah, but those who follow along Mubarak's political lines were the right choice at that time, right? Isn't that evident now from the way the population of Egypt is...
Well, certainly preferable to having the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
Were behind the demonstrations and the whole idea of Arab Spring.
Because remember at that time...
It was a wrong term, and it was misleading. It's like the term Kristallnacht, the night of crystal. It wasn't a night of crystal, it was the night of murder.
Because remember 3 years ago how so many were writing about how the U.S. abandoned Mubarak, and they did so quickly?
I remember when Mubarak talked to me about the West abandoning the Shah and saying, you're going to pay the price.
Right, and he was right. The United States and the president of the United States acted very quickly at that time. Financial aid, I believe, was stopped at that time. Am I right? I think there was a threat of financial aid being stopped.
And remember, we held up the helicopters to Egypt. We did provide it eventually, but now also I heard from people from Libya this week who are telling me, we need helicopters. We need to fight. We're fighting against these terrorist organizations in Benghazi. Tripoli today is just total chaos. The country itself is in chaos, but there are pockets of where they're really attempting to create more stable regimes, and they feel that not enough is done against the Sudan, where Iran is increasing its influence and presence and building defense systems, so that it'll be another Arab capital that falls to them without them having to send in troops and be responsible for the collection of garbage. They essentially become the dominant force, as they are in Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, Yemen today. And the exposures we saw this week about what is happening with the Houthis, or Houthis as they're called, and their increasing presence and the stabilized situation that obtains in Yemen today.
And by the way, as evidenced by this conversation, because of the events of this week, not even a mention of Iran, who continues to benefit from not being in the headlines.
Good for you. Absolutely right. And I doubt that there are many people in public media who this week took that recognition seriously, when we see that they're building two new reactors. They're light water reactors, and the State Department said, well, that's not covered by the deal, that, that's for peaceful purposes. It's like the Bushehr reactor that Iran bought from Russia. These are also Russian-built, and explains perhaps part of Russia's policy. But the very fact that we're saying it's okay, well, there should be a freeze now. This is a time of negotiations. That should be part of the process. We see that Kerry is meeting again with the foreign minister of Iran. The German foreign minister said, well, this is a real time, a prospect of some progress. And in the meantime, we see that they are expanding their nuclear activities. They admit that they build a missile manufacturing plant in Syria. There's word even that they're building a nuclear reactor near the Lebanese border, that that they're continuing to pour fortune into Iraq and into Syria and supporting the activities, and it is all to extend their influence. Look how they built up Hezbollah firepower, 100,000 missiles, but also now many more sophisticated missiles, surface to sea, et cetera. All of this time, while the world is focused elsewhere, Iran continues to move ahead.
Yeah, no question about that. I know we have a lot more to do, including the ICC and so many other things that are going on. We'll try to continue and get to all of it next week. And I remind you, oh, by the way, before I declare that the future of the Jewish peoples in the state of Israel, is there a direct threat? I'm not sure, based on what you said earlier with New York, the United States, etc. Is there a direct threat from ISIS to the U.S. now or not?
Is there a direct threat? Absolutely.
And they're
going to go after the transportation hubs, other things. Is it just America? No. Canada, the West, they're doing it in Africa. Look at Boko Haram.
But they have expressed this. But they've expressed the U.S. by name.
Oh, absolutely. They train people for the U.S. We're still the great devil. Europe is a minor devil, but they are taking it out on Europe, A, because it's easier to get in. They have bigger percentage of populations, areas to hide. In France, something I think we discussed 8-9 years ago about these these ghettos that the that have been established where the police don't go and Jews and Christians can't live there. And more than 1,000 in France today. And you can hide in there, and you can, you know, becomes a hotbed of activity because there's very little scrutiny that goes on of those areas. But 2,000 people was estimated, or 1,000 were killed in Baga in Nigeria, not related to the Jews, not related to anything else. And it's they're Christians, they're being killed, and you don't have any reaction. Who remembers the girls? Who remembers what's happening to the Yazidis? All of these people, this indifference that is so rampant, but we beat up the other countries that are trying to work with us because of alleged, you know, that they're too tough on the terrorists within their own borders or those who are potentially terrorists.
Malcolm, several people have been taken hostage by an unknown gunman at a post office in northwest suburb of Paris. This just came through a couple of minutes ago. The gunman's armed with a Kalashnikov rifle, a gun, and numerous grenades. French radio reports he may be holding from 2 to 5 people hostages. They were seized at 12 noon Paris time when a man rushed into the post office with a weapon. So we see that this is...
But, you know, they can be copycatters. They cannot. They don't necessarily have to be affiliated with a group. But the inspiration and that it becomes then the model and that young people are following this and whether when it was Mohamed Mahro killed the children in Toulouse... And look at the reaction. It's not just the reaction of the West. Saudi Arabia is building a 600-mile Great Wall to protect itself from ISIS or along the border with Iraq. They're building it along the border with Yemen. And I haven't heard people criticize the wall.
Yeah.
But the the fact is that they all see the threat as well.
All right, and we don't know what the reason is, of course, behind this. Hey, who knows? A variety of reasons, but obviously everyone will be paying careful attention to this latest.
The amount of weapons that are in their hands.
Right.
And each time you find something that triggered it. You know, when we called the killer at Fort Hood, workplace violence, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
You denude it of its significance,
mm-hmm.
and you
the best example of it.
The reality in that context,
or the guy who hangs an ISIS flag outside or inside an Australian cafe, and everyone says he's an isolated lone gunman who's crazy. I mean, come on, no influence from ISIS. Future of the Jewish peoples in the State of Israel. Malcolm, thank you. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Malcolm Honlein, Executive Vice Chairman, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations.